Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. I am overwhelmed, or maybe besieged, or maybe aghast, or many other adjectives, regarding just the sheer number of climate-related news from around the world. I feel like this is one of those things where we're becoming desensitized. There's so much happening. The progress and rate of change is so great that the sheer number of articles and breaking news and whatever, the research coming out about specific consequences of climate change in different parts of the world. And those things are just becoming less. I find myself not catching on to them, not realizing their impact as frequently as I would have in the past. Reading one of the articles that I'm about to go over 5 years ago would have been of massive importance because it was maybe the only big piece of news that came out that week or month or year or whatever it might be. And now it just feels like every day there's another one of these things happening. Along with the desensitization comment, man, I just can't believe. I read an article the other day, something about one of Trump's advisors talking about the potential for a nuclear weapon to be used by Israel in this conflict. And that should have been like a massive news of the week, something that freaked me out. And I just found myself being like, yeah, just another day, I guess, in this presidency or in this political climate. Like, why not? That's where we're at, right? Okay, I guess here it comes. What a terrible way to feel. Just the fact that I would not be that shocked if a nuclear weapon was used in the next few years. As a matter of fact, it was one of my bingo guesses from last year that we might see the first nuclear weapon ever used. The world spent a decade panicking about this very thing during the Cold War, teaching children in schools how to brace for it. People were building bunkers in the expectation of an all-out nuclear war. And today we hear about this potential for nuclear conflict again, and it's like, put it on the list of all the other things that we've got going on. Okay, anyway, back to the topic at hand. Let's talk about some of these different bits of news related to the climate around the world this week. I'm going to start with one from the U.S. This week is supposed to have record high temperatures. By the time you're hearing this, it is Thursday. I'm recording it on Sunday, so I'm 4 days ahead or behind, I guess, however you want to look at that, in recording this. You're probably already experiencing this weather if you are in the U.S., depending on where you are. I noticed about a week ago, I was telling my wife, holy crap, it's supposed to be 75 plus degrees here, you know, mid next week. For us, in March, that is unheard of. Typical March temperatures are 40 to 50 degrees. If we're getting into the 50s, I'm feeling great. 75 degrees, that's June weather. Now, it's not just the West that is experiencing this strange abnormality in the weather. All of the U.S. is actually supposed to be experiencing some sort of weird weather, but it's not just heat. So this article says, U.S. weather to go nuts with blizzard, polar vortex, heat dome, atmospheric river, all at once. I'm going to read part of this. It says, nearly every part of the United States is getting walloped by wild weather or just about to be. Days of downpours have begun in Hawaii. The Southwest will soon bake with day after day of record 100 degree plus heat. That's 38 Celsius plus. Two storms will dump snow by the foot over northern Great Lake states, and the dreaded polar vortex will again invade the Midwest and East with soul-crushing Arctic chill. This forecast of extremes comes as weather whiplash already hit much of the East. On Wednesday, Washington, D.C. residents walked around in shorts in record-breaking 86 degrees Fahrenheit, 30 degrees Celsius. On Thursday, it snowed. All of the country, even if you're not necessarily seeing extremes, are going to see generally changing from cold to warm or warm to cold to warm, said meteorologist Mark Chenard of the Weather Service's Weather Prediction Center in Maryland. So we here saw that whiplash. We were in the 60 plus degrees the last few days, which is already in and of itself, again, way warmer, way unheard of for March. And then it dipped down and we've been in the 30s and 40s the last day or so. And then tomorrow it's supposed to get back up into the 50s and then into the 60s and then into the 70s midweek. It certainly has been a whiplash. Weather extremes are expected in all 50 states. Looking at a map of the heat dome coming in through the U.S. West, it is labeled as one of the most extreme March heat waves in U.S. history. Ben C., who is all over Twitter or X, he's a climate researcher, scientist. He says, it says, breaking, U.S. scientists fear full-on summer heat wave in March is sign capitalist era emissions from industrial animal agriculture and fossil fuels have broken Earth's climate. And it's great to see the weather talked about in this way. It needs to happen more often. The map itself that it shows, just a massive bubble of severely anomalous heat. This is a temperature anomaly map. And everywhere from California up through Idaho, all the way into northern Montana and southern California, circling back from the Dakotas, the Midwest, down into northern Texas, and even parts of northern Mexico, are seeing 12 to 15, and some areas even more than that, 12 to 15 degrees Celsius anomalies. That is, we're talking 30 plus degrees Fahrenheit anomalies. Then you go to places on the East Coast or the Southeast, where they're experiencing more snow than is normal. They've taken all the snow from the West and transplanted it in the East, and other areas seeing below zero temperatures. It's just a wild time. And this in the year in which we're most likely going to see a very strong El Nino, which is just going to continue to exacerbate and make these types of oddities happen more often. All right, you may have remembered talking about a deadly South Australian algal bloom a year or so ago and the effects that it was having on many local communities and on ocean life in the area. This article from The Guardian says, stripped of life, the deadly South Australian algal bloom is still spreading 1 year on. Quote from the article, the largest and most destructive algal bloom in Australia's history is persisting along parts of the South Australian coastline a year on from when it was first detected. From a distance, it can be hard to grasp just how unusual and devastating the crisis has been. Most harmful blooms only last a few weeks. This one has been unrelenting. Since March of last year, it has affected 20,000 square kilometers of coast, an area twice the size of Greater Sydney, and ranks among the worst for marine mass mortality globally, killing millions of sea creatures, from tiny shellfish to top predators like white sharks. It is Australia's first bloom of Karenia cristata, a rare and toxic type of algae, deadly to marine life and harmful to human health. This according to Professor Shauna Murray from the University of Technology, Sydney. Murray, who was the first to identify the species in water samples from South Australia, says the species has only been recorded in two other places worldwide, South Africa and an island off the coast of Newfoundland, Canada. Professor David Booth, a marine ecologist who specializes in sea dragons at the University of Technology, Sydney, describes the impact on marine life as the most awful, tragic thing I've personally seen in the ocean in my 40-year career. More than 780 species have been affected, including devastating losses of the state's marine emblem, the leafy sea dragon, reported by divers and citizen scientists. The article goes on to talk about multiple different species and the way that it's affecting them, massive losses that they're experiencing in each. It goes on to say, the year-long crisis has had a profound psychological impact on South Australians, according to a study. Two-thirds of respondents said they couldn't stop thinking about the bloom when surveyed last year. About a third of those directly affected linked their distress to witnessing dead marine species on the beach. My morning beach walk has turned from a connect with nature walk to the morning death walk, one participant responded. About half, 47%, said they had stopped engaging in recreational activities, including surfing, swimming, diving, or walking on the beach. About a quarter reported physical health concerns such as coughing or respiratory irritation after visiting affected beaches. When the ocean suffers, communities suffer too, says the lead author of the paper, Dr. Brianna LeBusque.
Es gibt Tage, da geht einfach alles schief. Im Autoverkehr. Im Porzellanladen. Sogar im eigenen Garten. In solchen Fällen ist es gut, eine gute Versicherung zu haben. Gut im Preis und gut in der Leistung. So wie die WGV. Jetzt zur WGV wechseln und sparen. WGV. Gut versichert und gut ist.
Towards the end of the article, it says, DNA analysis of archived seawater samples collected near Kangaroo Island since 2016 revealed the species was present for nearly a decade before the bloom kicked off. However, in 2025, something happened in the environment that made it dramatically increase in abundance, says Professor Justin Seymour at the University of Technology, Sydney. Further research is needed to find out what caused it to take off and whether the species could be present in other states. All right. That is a depressing one to read, and scary, as they say, that more research is needed to know if this same thing could spark up and happen in other areas, and what was it that sort of caused the takeoff to happen. Moving on to Earth.com, an article titled Mangrove Waters Are Losing Oxygen, Putting Fish Nurseries at Risk. Mangrove forests are famous for protecting coastlines and sheltering young fish, but the water inside these tangled coastal habitats may not always be safe as it appears. A new global study found that mangrove waters frequently slip into a stressful chemical state with very low oxygen and unusually high carbon dioxide. When that happens, the short windows when fish can safely enter mangrove nurseries begins to shrink. Across 23 mangrove sites worldwide, tidal waters repeatedly swung into the same oxygen-poor, carbon dioxide-rich state that the study identified as a growing ecological stress. In many systems, the stressful conditions appeared not as rare spikes, but as recurring phases that lingered through large portions of the tidal cycle. So these are becoming more common. They are lasting longer. Fisheries are feeling the pressure. Obviously, native ocean life is feeling the pressure. The article talks about how fish are starting to leave mangroves. In one mangrove system, several real fish species stopped entering the forest when oxygen levels dropped below about 70 to 80% of normal. These were often the larger, more valuable fish that use mangroves as temporary feeding grounds or places to hide from predators. Young fish are usually more sensitive than adults, so even losing a few hours of access to these safe areas can matter during the earliest stages of life. The article ends by talking about one thing we already know about most things in collapse, which is that the issue may be understated. These insights highlight a larger shift in how scientists view mangrove decline. In a warming world, mangroves are not only losing trees, they may also be losing the oxygen-rich water that supports fish, crabs, and other marine life. Okay, and lastly, we're going to go to theindependent.co.uk with an article titled, Experts Warn of Dramatic Development as All But Two Austrian Glaciers Retreat. Experts warn all but two of Austria's 96 glaciers have retreated. I guess it's good to hear that not all 96 have retreated. But the vast, vast majority of them have. We're talking like, what is that, 97%? 98%? The article says, Austria's glaciers are in rapid decline, with all but two of the nation's 96 ice formations retreating over the past 2 years, a dramatic development that starkly highlights the escalating impact of climate change. The latest report from the Austrian Alpine Club reveals significant losses, with the Alpiner Ferner in Tyrol and Stubacher, I'm not going to be able to pronounce these names, Sonblickies, in Salzburg, each shrinking by more than 100 meters. The average retreat across the country measured over 20 meters. Even Australia's largest glacier, the Pasterze, is experiencing disintegration of the glacier tongue, making the consequences of climate change visible. It added that the findings confirm once again the long-term trend. Glaciers in Austria continue to shrink significantly in length, area, and volume. The retreat of glaciers across Europe has vast implications for drinking water, power generation, agriculture, infrastructure, and recreational activities, fundamentally altering the alpine landscape. This alarming trend is not unique to Austria. Neighboring Switzerland, home to Europe's highest number of glaciers, has observed similar decline in recent years, reflecting a broader global phenomenon. Poor weather conditions, including low snowfall, warm temperatures, including an exceptionally hot June last year, nearly 5 degrees Celsius above the average, have contributed to the retreat. The glaciers are melting, and with every new report, the urgency grows, says Vice President Nicole Slupetsky. This is Vice President of the Austrian Alpine Club. Quote, it's no longer a question of whether we can still save the glaciers in their old form. It's about mitigating the consequences for ourselves. All right. These were a few articles that came up quickly. I know they're not the only ones. There are probably 100 more articles like this just from the last week or two that we could talk about in regards to the climate. Feel free to send me whatever you're seeing, maybe from your area. I talk a lot about the perspective of what I'm seeing in my area, for example, with the Colorado River. with my own weather experiences, but I'd love to hear from you as well. Please feel free to reach out, breakingdowncollapse@gmail.com. Okay, thanks for being here. We will see you tomorrow.
Es gibt Tage, da geht einfach alles schief. Im Autoverkehr. Im Porzellanladen. Sogar im eigenen Garten. In solchen Fällen ist es gut, eine gute Versicherung zu haben. Gut im Preis und gut in der Leistung. So wie die WGV. Jetzt zur WGV wechseln und sparen. WGV. Gut versichert und gut ist.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.